update. I want to bring you back to that press conference that's in D.C. right now going on. Obviously, this is a major update regarding the Benghazi terror attack. Folks, let's listen back in.
An American ambassador, elite military personnel, and a State Department employee were all violently murdered. For 13 hours, the American cavalry never came. For 13 hours, they waited for help that never came. Today, President Trump is making sure that American justice is coming for those individuals responsible for the deaths of those four Americans. Bakush is now on U.S. soil because of the president, Attorney General Pam Bondi, and Kash Patel. The FBI, the Department of Justice, never forgot. There are prosecutors in this room right now who have been in the office for 13 years and have consistently handled this matter in this case. This department will never forget the seemingly forgotten in that outpost in Benghazi. Bakush was first charged by complaint in 2015, which was sealed for 11 years. An indictment, an 8-count indictment, has been unsealed, and it charges Bakush with the murder of Ambassador Chris Stevens, the murder of State Department employee Sean Smith, the attempted murder of State Department Special Agent Scott Wicklund, and conspiracy to provide materials for terrorists and support that resulted in the death of four Americans, as well as arson at the special mission. I don't have to go through all of the facts, but every one of us remembers this case. I reported on it when I worked at Fox. I had relationships, as Kash Patel just said, with the families. And last night, as soon as they were in custody, because of Pam and because of Kash, we had a limited unsealing order from Judge Cooper that allowed me to speak to the family members to let them know that justice was coming for Bakush. I spoke with Sean Smith's mother, who I've known for years and have communicated with for years. I spoke with Tyrone Woods' wife, widow, Dr. Dorothy Woods. I spoke with Ambassador Chris Stevens' family, as well as Glenn Doherty's brother, Greg, as well as his widow. These were people who never expected that justice would be coming. They never knew about the determination in this room and behind me and the incredible work of the FBI along this case for years and years, because this was something that mattered. The Benghazi saga was a painful one for Americans. It has stayed with all of us. And let me be very clear, there are more of them out there. Time will not stop us from going after these predators, no matter how long it takes, in order to fulfill our obligation to those families who suffered horrific pain at the hands of these violent terrorists. And now, I again want to tell everyone that American justice is here, that President Trump will make sure that the cavalry comes for Americans, no matter where they are in this world. Thank you.
We'll take a few questions.
I'm looking, I have a on topic and an off topic.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about how he was captured, where he was captured. Was he in jail for a while before? Was he at home? What can you tell us about how this all went down?
We're not going to give out a lot of the details, but I'm going to let Kash take what we can say.
The general's right. We have to protect the integrity of the investigation and the ongoing prosecution. That's of the utmost importance. It always is, to make sure even this individual, receives the constitutional protections only afforded in the United States of America.
All right, but folks, I'm going to step in here, get another hard commercial break. But that is the photo that has been released by Fox News of the individual who has been taken into custody. We'll bring you more details on that throughout today's show. So buckle up. More discuss in just a bit. Don't go anywhere.
I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in, and they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives. These bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy. It locks for you. This is forest green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get some ultramethylene blue.
What do you got there, Angel Eyes?
It's a new Patriot Silver folding knife from thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, Blondie, look at me. I got all three.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to the American Journal. Obviously, big news coming out in regards to Benghazi. We'll bring you the details. We're waiting on that criminal complaint to be made public, and then I will sift through that and bring you what is most important. But that's big news coming to us right now from Washington, D.C. They say that they have arrested one of the top terrorists involved in that Benghazi terror attack that took the lives of so many brave Americans. And Fox News publishing this photo, of course, of that suspect. Now, again, the DOJ saying that this was the main person involved in all of that, Al-Ba-Kashu. That is his name. So we'll keep your eyes on that, and we'll let you know when anything big happens there. But I want to buckle down to a story we brought to you yesterday. As many of you guys know, we had Sonny Lobosco on the program. And Sonny is a big, obviously, a fan of what's going on all around the medical movement. She wants the help. And this is the big thing with Sonia. She is, as many years as I've known her, she's been a very helpful person and wants to help those who need it the most. And Sonia brought this story and put it on my radar. And we shared the details with you yesterday briefly, but you know, I wanted to learn more about the fight for medical freedom. As many of you guys know, we talk about it on this program quite often when it comes to things like the COVID vaccines and others. But when it comes to those who are diagnosed with terminal illnesses, they just want a shot and they want to be able to try out different experimental drugs because, well, what do they have to lose? They're fighting for their lives. Now, obviously, President Trump was on board with all of that, and he's done just that over both the first term and second term. But there's a lot that needs to be fixed, specifically, though, through the FDA and HHS. And it's something that's worth fighting for. You know, we talk about it often, but yesterday we had Sonia on to talk about someone specifically, Mike Hugo. And he was an individual who is a patient advocate. He was someone who was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and he's fighting hard for not only himself, but for others to go out there and to be able to participate in these experimental treatments. Mike joins us now. We're very excited to have him on the program to walk us through what he's endured and what he's advocating for other Americans. And Mike, it's an honor to have you on the program today. You know, Sonia Lobosco speaks very highly of you. Not only yesterday when we had you on the show, but yesterday she called me afterwards and she was like, Brianna, Mike is a patriot. He loves this country. He is trying his very best to push and to help other Americans to have access to experimental treatments if they're in this situation. So it's an honor to have you on the program today, sir. I wanted to have our audience hear it from you specifically. What it was like? How did you get to hear this diagnosis? And then what happened after that when you wanted to try out a treatment that wasn't exactly FDA approved? And what type of obstacles did you have to jump over? So let's start with the very basics. When did you learn and how did you learn that you had terminal cancer?
So I was driving home. I've been in the medical field for a long time as an engineer and a sales manager, mm-hmm. and I was actually driving home from a neurosurgery event that we had sponsored. And on the way home, I got a little nauseous and then I don't remember anything else. And I crashed my car, had a grand mal seizure. And then they broke my window open. The police did. And then I just remember like combating and fighting the ambulance staff as they were trying to get me hooked up to an IV. I had no idea what had happened. It was a perfect, you know, like Tuesday afternoon, driving home to go see my kids, and my entire life changed.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's devastating to hear that. I mean, I've got family members who have seizures, and you know the after effects of that are absolutely devastating, and it's very, very scary. We've got this photo up, and you shared this with me. This is the tumor that they actually found, and it's massive. This was, I believe, the size of a golf ball was how Sonia described it.
Yeah, so actually, this is originally it was about the size of a tangerine, mm-hmm. and then this grew back within 3 weeks. So you have glioblastoma, which is one of the worst terminal cancers in the world, and then you have early rapid regrowth from that, which is a bad indication. Mm-hmm. And so being in the industry, I knew how bad glioblastoma was, and I had resources to reach out to. And particularly my wife and the Mucella Foundation, she quit her job and volunteered at the Mucella Foundation. And the reason why that's important is because I get to see clinical data come through daily from her volunteer efforts. And I'm seeing incredible clinical data. And I'm, you know, I got a call last night from a friend. He had regrowth and he couldn't get literally last night, he couldn't get into any of these clinical trials. And so I'm just like racking my head. I'm like, what can we do? And there are so many options that I personally know that we could get that could quadruple. I mean, just wearing this thing on my head is the only thing that's happened new in the past 30 or 40 years for glioblastoma. It's just so hard to get through the full FDA process. And it costs so much money and takes so much time that generations of us are dying. Yeah. And the right to try was something that, you know, it was very bipartisan. It was, you know, Democrats and Republicans pretty much came together on this. So we could access this newer experimental medicine quicker. But when the rubber meets the road, you know, some of the institutional people have made it impossible to use or almost impossible. I think the numbers are like 16 patients since 2018 have gotten this.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that because I think that's really important. I believe this was under President Trump's first term when he pushed the right to try through. And I thought it was a done deal. I didn't realize that there were some hurdles to overcome, I believe, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, over at the FDA, I believe it is. And I also understand a lot of these companies, they're probably hearing from their attorneys to be very careful because of maybe fear about malpractice lawsuits that could pile up afterwards. What is the biggest, or I guess you could walk us through some of the bigger hurdles when it comes to those who are diagnosed with terminal illnesses and want to partake in these clinical trials?
Yeah, so there's a couple different programs and that the FDA is always like, oh, well, we have a program. So you have expanded access. And I can tell you I'm living this world and there is a supplement that was an iron supplement. It was actually gallium meltite and it's right next to iron on the pediatric, on the PRAC table. And I was going to take this. This is through phase one. It's very safe. And what it does is it takes place of iron. So when the cancer cells try to divide, it's not actually iron and they die. Very, very simple, safe medicine. Mm-hmm. So I went to my clinic and I said, hey, can I get access to this? I talked to the CEO of the company. They're willing to provide it, which, like you said, that was a big, you know, hurdle to get through, that they would risk that. And the hospital system that I was at said, we have a blanket policy. We do not do expanded access programs for one patient. The paperwork is too hard. It takes so long to do, to submit. Now, once it's submitted, the FDA does a pretty good job of, you know, responding quickly. Mm-hmm. But just as a blanket policy, most hospitals just won't do it. They just won't. And I said, well, how much money is it going to take? You know, come on. Yeah. And so we did donate some money and they did do it. And I got other patients on board. So it wasn't just me. And at the end of the day, I was still going to be willing to pay, you know, significant amount of money for all this. And they said, well, you know, your tumor hasn't regrown that much. So you don't qualify. And so I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So that's the expanded access program. They have accelerated approval It's pretty much only for pediatrics. It really doesn't happen very often. And so there really is nothing. And unfortunately, last night I had to tell my friend, you don't qualify for clinical trials. You can't get these expanded access and you can't get the right to try. Get your stuff in order. And that was last night after we had already been talking about setting up this meeting today. And it was heartbreaking because there are things that he could get tomorrow that literally the FDA is just like, well, we got to keep you safe. And I'm like, yeah, it's real safe. He'll be dead in a month.
Yeah.
And so I understand and could write a book or at least a chapter about placebos because I used to design medical equipment. I'm not a dumb person, mm-hmm. but sometimes it makes sense to do that. And sometimes it doesn't. And I was in the Ways and Means Committee meeting because we tried to push the Promising Pathway Act with Senator Mike Braun and Kristen Gillibrand. It was bipartisan, but we were just trying to fix some of the holes and loops. And, you know, Elizabeth Warren got up on the table in the committee hearing and she pounded her fist and she said, we have to keep the gold standard of the FDA. We have to have phase 3 placebo-controlled clinical studies, or, you know, we're risking all these things. And I said to her, I said, you're murdering the patients that you are signing up for the placebo. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a very strong words and the exact wording of everything. I mean, I have a brain cancer patient, so I don't want her to sue me or something like that. But that was the gist of the conversation. And it was terrible. It was terrible. And I found out later some of the reasons why her and Bernie and them were against it was the actual lobbyists from the attorneys that sue hospitals and that sue for malpractice. They didn't like that the risk was going to be something that they would, you know, kind of wave your risk away. But if you're dying, there is really no other choice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know you had that.
We've got a great control room. They pull up things really quickly. And you know, you're not the first person I've heard this about when it comes to Elizabeth Warren. People have told me that she's a very nasty woman privately. And I truly believe it. The fact that she would even speak with you or speak to you like that is pretty gross in itself. But it's frustrating. I can only imagine what you've had to endure throughout all of this. And, you know, you just said the story about your friend. We need to get this resolved. This needs to be a top issue. And I'll be reaching out to all involved parties at HHS and the FDA as well to see what they could get done, because this is unacceptable. I mean, this is not okay to do this to our fellow Americans. We should be trying to fight for their lives and allow them access to life-saving medical treatment. I mean, you've got nothing to lose. Why not allow them to participate and to conduct these studies and to put their lives in line for this? I mean, they've got nothing to lose. And so, Mike, this is mind blowing to me. Before you go, though, I wanted to ask, and any information that you're willing to divulge, I don't want to push you too much, but, you know, what's the current status of your fight right now?
So I get the best healthcare treatment in the world. And I mean that because I came from the medical device background. And then my wife, she at this point has like a PhD in GBM, glioblastoma. And then she works with the Mucella Foundation, which is the leading GBM place foundation. And so I'm on supplements. I'm on Optune. I wear this thing 98% of the time. I'm what they call a unicorn. With the early rapid regrowth and with my KPS score being basically 100. I always send funny videos of me like shooting bows and arrows, some kind of crazy fishing pictures and stuff like that to my surgeon. And they're like, hey, my score is still good, but I'm what they call stable. Oh yeah. That was a kayak fishing. It was 104 degrees that day. And I was still able to keep my treatment on. That was out of Boynton Beach and like West Palm Beach area. I'm stable. This is such a terrible disease that they don't ever say it's in recurrence, but it's as close to that as we can be. And I just take it scan by scan. And I just hope, you know, I think Magic Johnson, and that's, he was able to come up with a cocktail. And when you're doing these clinical trials, they look at one variable, because the cost to get to market doing more than one variable skyrockets. And so they can't do combination therapies, but the combination therapies is what's going to solve and cure cancer. And so the Promising Pathway Act, or, you know, kind of other options, making a right to try easier with a, maybe an AI overlay to see what is working and what's not. Mm-hmm. That is the real solution. And I have friends going to Germany. They're going to Mexico. They're spending all kinds of money to get some of these treatments out over there. And these companies develop it in the United States. And we're shipping manufacturing, we're shipping technology, all that over in Europe, where there are less regulations, believe it or not, in Germany, mm-hmm. which is a, you know, notoriously a high regulated country. And so, you know, it's just a big miss. And there's a lot of patients that are suffering unnecessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Mike, I look forward to trying to see if we can get anywhere with this, because this is definitely something that's a priority for us. I know Sonia has taken on the task to get you in front of a lot of important people, and this story needs to be told. So we're honored to have you on the show today, Mike, and thank you for fighting. We'll stay in touch, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to get somewhere on all of this, because you and your wife are doing incredible work, and so we're very grateful for that. So thank you.
Yeah. My only ask is that if anybody that's hearing this is able to get someone from the RFK Jr.'s team to sit down with me. There are other states that are actually pushing this law through the state level, because the federal level is such a mess. And so I think a 5-minute conversation with them, and then using real examples to push through, I think we could solve this problem and, you know, save thousands of patients' lives, or, you know, get an extra daddy-daughter dance for them. So thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate what you do for America.
All right. Well, Mike, it is an honor to have you on the show today. Thank you for joining us. We greatly appreciate it. And we're going to keep praying for you, your family. You guys are doing incredible work. So thank you. Folks, we'll keep you up to date on that story, Mike's story. It's not going anywhere anytime soon. And so it's an honor to have him on today's program. Of course, Sonia Labosco did incredible work yesterday when we had her on the show. And she's like, I got to introduce you to him. So that was definitely an incredible discussion to have. And I look forward to keeping you all updated on that front. Robert Newcomb is going to be with us in just a few moments. We wanted to talk about something that I thought was deeply, deeply concerning. The city of Dearborn, Michigan has launched its new state's full-scale drone as first responders program. So it is the drone as first responders program. According to the reports, it's using something called Skydo. Apparently they're using these drones that are going to be surveilling the area. Now, apparently they're going to be equipped with high definition cameras, zoom, thermal imaging, spotlights, and speakers. So in real time, they could assist in instances that might be violent incidences, traffic crashes, missing person searches, vehicle break-ins, and more. They're claiming that this is going to help keep the community safe. And it's quite interesting given the fact that it's Dearborn, Michigan. Joining me to discuss, Robert Newcomb. He is an engineer scientist and a U.S. Navy veteran as well, an expert on all things AI. And it's an honor to have Robert on the show. Robert, I'm sorry we got to you a little late in the game, but we appreciate you being here. The Dearborn, Michigan story is deeply concerning. I'll let you react, because obviously any drone programs have a lot of people, especially our audience, on edge. So what's your reaction to that?
Yeah, it's, you know, I saw it as kind of inevitable, given the way the technology has progressed over the years. But, you know, we in the military, we kind of use the same kind of technology in Afghanistan and Iraq when it comes to ISR. My concern, though, is if we're using it domestically, how much we're parrying what China is doing. And they call it a social trust program. But my concern is, you know, the way China is doing it is they track their population by facial recognition. They use other kinds of AI technologies to what they call computer vision to recognize objects within an image. So you can track faces with that. You can track vehicles. You can track, other objects. The area of concern I really have as we move forward with this technology is what we call persistent ISR or persistent surveillance. And so there's already reports coming out where even here in Utah, we have these camera systems and we don't know whether they're what kind of surveillance they're conducting. Mm-hmm. We don't know. They say they're not doing facial recognition and tracking people, but yet the camera systems are queuing to faces and tracking bodies as they move across the front of the camera. So, yeah, all of this is to me concerning, especially when it comes to our civil liberties. And we just don't know exactly on the other side, the back end, what kind of data they're collecting, processing, how much they're allowing AI to take control or make decisions on its own. This is for sure. It's becoming more and more concerning as the technology progresses. And so, you got to ask yourself, at what point do we trade, our security and safety for our liberty?
Yeah.
And, liberty is just this. This goes back even to our founding fathers and why America was even created. Right. They were seeking refuge from oppressive governments. And so, as the technology progresses, we certainly have to have more of a say in what this technology does in our community. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, Robert, it's deeply concerning. And, I'm also a part-time Pentagon reporter these days, too. And so when I saw that the Pentagon has selected 25 companies to participate in the first phase of the drone dominance program, I was also a little concerned. I mean, the Pentagon's leaning in on being more of a leader when it comes to AI, and we're becoming very reliant on that. And so I'm sure there's going to be a lot that they have to work out. But I am concerned anytime it comes to AI and our Pentagon getting more involved in this. I'll give you the final minute to kind of sound off on that program itself. Are there any concerns that you have with both the Pentagon leaning in on the AI stuff and as well as starting up programs that are, like I said, the 25 companies to participate in their new drone dominance program?
Yeah, there is concern for sure. We've typically and historically have kept the Department of Defense, Department of War separate right from domestic activity for a reason. Mm-hmm. And there's even been, I think it was 2 years ago, the National Defense Authorization Act allocated millions of dollars towards a new collaboration between civilian airports and DoD installations. What that, the details of that, we don't really know. But there's concerns when it comes to like policing or thinking that you have to have some kind of control over your civilization or population. So if you look at China, their main motivation is control behavior. Mm-hmm. And when they don't have that control, right, their social credit system, will penalize you and even lock you in your own gated community.
Yeah.
So
Robert, stay right there up against the hard commercial break. I just want to make sure that we get the rest of this. So don't go anywhere. We'll give you the next 2 minutes and just a second after this break. Robert, thank you for being with us.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug that Irish CMOS was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. Hmm. All that stopped with the CMOS because it's a thyroid issue and the CMOS has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue. Yeah, the methylene blue, life-changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. Like, it's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his supplement formulas. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together. And they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good. I love the greens powder, that I've tried every different type of greens powder out there, and nothing has had as much stuff, amazing stuff packed into it, that has like a decent flavor to it. So the Optimal Human is like a daily staple.
It's good,
me.
Right?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. And, okay. And I'm not saying that because just for you guys, but seriously, I've tried so many greens powders over the years, and it really is the best.
And are we paying you, Katie? Did we pay you to call in?
I would love to work for you. I swear, Alex Jones Fisher is on like my mantle with all of my family pictures.
That's like, amazing.
We love Alex.
Some people call in, this person, you're paying them. But like, no, our products really are good. People really like them. It's true.
Well, I accredited him to like the life-changing experience I had when I decided to leave California because I didn't want to bash Trump. And I listened to Jones when I found him. And I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here.
Right.
And so I moved back home to Ohio. And 3 months later, I met my husband. I feel like that life-changing event for me was because of listening to all the information that he gives. He's not like predicting the future. He's just giving you the information that's hard to find, where they're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, now you have a 3-year-old kid, so your life's going great.
Yes.
I've said it before, but with a lot of these products, like, you really don't know what it's going to do for you because you might not know that you're lacking a vitamin or lacking a mineral. And it like happens all the time with iodine. Iodine is one of those things where like, as soon as you start taking it, you're like, oh, I'm not supposed to, and I'm not a doctor, this is not a medical claim, but people experience this. I've heard it from my friends where they're like, I'm not supposed to be tired all the time. I apparently just was lacking iodine. And it's like, you don't know if you're going to feel more energetic, if you're going to sleep better, if you're not going to have chills anymore. It's like people sort of go around thinking that that's the way their body is, but it's like, no, you're missing a key component. You're missing a vitamin, you're missing a mineral, and you don't even realize it until you start taking something from the Alex Jones store. So I completely understand that you start taking the Irish sea moss and suddenly something that you thought was just the way your body is. No, turns out you can fix it. You can fix these things. Again, I'm not making medical claims, but you can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for the plug, Katie.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to the show. Robert Newcomb is with us right now, and he is discussing how obviously both AI, but most importantly, the drone programs that are being utilized by our federal government and local governments now, the threat that it faces. He was, for the commercial break, was talking about the Chinese and how they utilize software like this. And so, you know, Robert, I want to give you the final couple of minutes here and let you continue your discussion. But you were, before the interruption, we're talking about the Chinese and how they utilize this technology. So I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, so there's some real concerning things. You know, most of us already know this, but, you know, the way our cell phones even track us using what a software called that was developed in like 2015, there's a software called sentiment analysis where, you know, scans your face and tries to predict your interests. And then that whatever company, you know, caters to their advertising community to show you, you know, videos based on your interests, right, from sentiment analysis. So there's software like that was developed over a decade ago. And, you know, other things that are coming down the pipe as far as computer vision, AI making its own decisions. And my main concern, and you know, we just talked about this, but is how we're parrying what China is doing. So And with the influx, right, of our really our democracy changing into a more social and communist form of regime, these things are just going to get more and more oppressive. So to me, we have to, as citizens, as voters, we kind of have to draw a line somewhere and say, you know, where's it going to be enough, and where, how much are we going to be willing to accept from our own government when it comes to this kind of surveillance state? I'm in kind of the camp that is okay with a certain level of surveillance as long as it's in a public or populated space. But when it, you know, over my home, you know, into my yard, those are kind of lines that I have to draw pretty quickly when it comes to, you know, what kind of surveillance state are we progressively becoming?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's definitely something that's deeply concerning. And Robert, we look forward to having you back on the program to discuss this at greater length. Thank you for joining the show today. We look forward to having you back on soon. Sorry for the interruption, but we appreciate you being here with us today. Folks, a lot going on this front, a lot going on with the drones. I believe we actually have a video in regards to what's going on in Dearborn, Michigan, that lead-in that I was just telling you about. Let's take a listen to how officials in Dearborn, Michigan are detailing that drone program.
Dearborn Police Department was one of the first departments in the state of Michigan to adopt the drone program. And so we have a number of different drones of different sizes for different uses.
When we go to a scene, when we log into the drone, it sends out an email to our drone team and the command staff. They're able to log into that and get a live feed of the drone. And if you have more eyes watching what's going on, somebody might catch something that they see that you might not see. We have a smaller drone that's sent inside houses that's able to go in smaller spaces, so we do have that drone. The other drones are just used for exterior.
Being able to have this is a huge asset. We use it for anything from search and rescue missions, surveillance. We help the fire department with the thermal camera. If we have a neighborhood that's been having a string of people breaking into cars, we're able to fly at night in the neighborhoods, looking up and down the streets in backyards for people that are tugging on door handles. The camera has 64x zoom. From here at Ford Field in Dearborn, we're able to see downtown Detroit. We can actually see the Renaissance building.
All right, obviously, this is all deeply concerning. We're keeping our eye on it, though. You know that surveillance state is nothing I'm a fan of. But obviously, also Dearborn, Michigan. We all know about Dearborn, Michigan. So that in itself, to me, is deeply, deeply concerning. But let's switch up gears a little bit. Obviously, the Epstein files were released last week, and there was a lot to kind of sift through in all of that. Now, folks, there's been some interesting things coming to the surface, but there's something even more interesting. If you're up against H-1B visas, you might actually be super against it after this segment. There's a new report in the Dallas Express that details specifically how Epstein utilized H-1B visas, which apparently landed Ghislaine Maxwell access into the United States. Joining us to discuss is Kellen McGovern-Jones. Sorry, my friend, I appreciate you being here today. It was kind of like a last-minute booking, and you know, you sent this over my way, and this had my ears perking up, right? Because we talk about H-1B visas constantly. The last time we had you on the show, we were also talking about H-1B visas. But I didn't know there was an Epstein angle to all of this. So break down your latest report over at the Dallas Express.
Thank you for having me back, Brianna. There's been a huge revelation in the Epstein files that just about everyone else has missed but the Dallas Express. Jeffrey Epstein's operation could not have functioned without the H-1B visa. Ghislaine Maxwell, who was the only person convicted in the sex trafficking operation that was apparently run by Epstein, came to the United States for the first time on a long-term, durable basis on an H-1B visa. And as you know, Brianna, you can't come to the U.S. on an H-1B visa unless you have the sponsorship of an employer. And her employer was Jeffrey Epstein. It was specifically J. Epstein and Company. And they start their enterprise from that point, which is around 1993. Now, funny enough, her visa is approved on the exact day that her father, 1 year anniversary of when her father mysteriously died at sea. Now, there's a lot of moving parts here, and it's not just Ghislaine Maxwell, who's on the H-1B visa, who's involved, but she's certainly the top person.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting that it goes over and you kind of figure you discovered this angle to it all. Doesn't make sense for anyone who's not a fan of it. I mean, I'm not a fan of obviously the H-1B visas, and this just adds to our argument that we just shouldn't have them at all. So I thought this was really fascinating, and I thought it was fascinating because nobody else really spotted this one. I've never heard this before, so this was quite the enlightening story. I also want to get to another H-1B visa story that you've been covering as well. Dallas school spent $2.5 million in taxpayer funds on H-1B visas, their legal services. Break this down, because again, this is something that's happening in public schools.
Yes, it is. Dallas ISD spent $2.5 million in federal funds covering their H-1B visa expenses, which is sort of peculiar. It's not illegal, but I think people did not realize the extent to which the local school districts, which are major H-1B employers in Texas, Dallas ISD has employed about 1,200 H-1B workers over the last 5 years, has spent $2.5 million executing that. Now, those federal funds only cover the recruitment and retention costs of getting an H-1B worker. They don't actually pay their salary. So that is coming out of Dallas ISD's pocket. But they were able to cover a lot of the upfront costs for H-1B visas through federal grants, Title II ESSA grants, which are supposed to cover recruitment and retention. Now, that money can be used for a variety of things, but in this case, it appears Dallas ISD was using it to recruit bilingual education teachers and special education teachers from overseas. And there's sort of a nexus of MAHA, of MAGA, of immigration, all right there in that story, because why does Dallas ISD need so many bilingual education teachers? Well, they have a lot of students that don't speak English, and much of that is due to our immigration system. And what's going on that's requiring Dallas ISD to require so many special education teachers? That could probably be a whole hours long podcast in itself. But in any event, they are using federal funds to cover those expenses, and they're contracting out to an outside law firm called Ramirez and Associates, which is a immigration law firm that's based out of Texas and also based out of Mexico. And they got that contract, apparently, according to the documents I obtained, with a diversity designation, with a designation that was reserved for women and minority-owned businesses. Now, Dallas has started changing its language because there's some concern about DEI policies at the local level and whether that's compliant to state law. And so they've started striking out that DEI language or DEI approximating language out of their contracts. But this particular contract in the records that they gave me still has that diversity designation to it. So federal funds being used by a school district under a diversity contract to cover H-1B costs.
It's so frustrating when you map it out like that, Kellen. I got to be honest with you. It's a little infuriating. I know, though, that Texas, obviously, we got a brave AG, Ken Paxton. And I know that Sarah Gonzalez has also been on the H-1B visa beat in the DFW area. I did a video where Ken announced that he was going to be looking into certain cases. Is there any updates as to how this might work out for those public schools that are doing the H-1B visa? I say it's a scam, but they're out here doing that too. Is there any update on what the AG's office is going to do about this?
Well, the AG's office has not announced any action in the public sector with the school districts. That his announcement was completely confined to the private sector. And there could be crimes going on in the public sector as well, but there's so much going on in the private sector. I think that's where the AG's attention is. We mentioned the Epstein story just a moment ago, and that Ghislaine Maxwell story concludes on kind of a teaser for the next part in that H-1B Epstein series, which is already out, and examines the models, so-called models, that were traveling with Jeffrey Epstein from his island in St. near St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands to the to other places in the U.S. And these models are here on H-1B visas, and they're with firms associated with Jean-Luc Brunel, who was a famous kind of model talent scout who was also charged with, amongst a variety of things, sex trafficking. And there's been other reports establishing that there may have been a sex trafficking operation going on under Jean-Luc Brunel. He's a very close friend of Epstein, and they're traveling with these models on Epstein's planes on H-1B visas. So, you know, Paxton has taken action to investigate what may be going on in DFW with regard to certain private sector entities, but there is obviously a connection between the H-1B visa and sex trafficking, which is clearly established under the Epstein files that were just released. And that may be something the attorneys general should consider looking into, although he has not yet announced any action in that regard.
Yeah, well, it's something we're definitely going to keep our eye on. Kellen, thank you for joining the show. As always, we appreciate you bringing us these stories. We look forward to continuing on to carry whatever coverage you do and whatever you uncover in regards to the H-1B visas. I call them a scams. I think they're all scams at this point. So we'll continue to follow what you're working on, and we appreciate you jumping on the show today. Kellen McGovern-Jones, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time as always and all the incredible work you do over at the Dallas Express. You guys can give him a follow on X. Cowtown Caller is where you could find him on X. Thank you, my friend. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Brianna.
All right. I'm keeping my eye on a lot of things going on all around the country. Specifically, though, it looks like the chairman of the Oversight Committee, James Comer, just sent out a letter because he's looking for some financial records regarding Ilhan Omar's husband. Now, as many of you guys know, Ilhan Omar is being accused of a lot of things. A lot of people call her a fraudster, but her net worth jumped up very rapidly after getting married to a man who was married before, who then after they started dating, got a divorce. It's kind of a messy situation. But now the Oversight Committee is looking for some answers, and they are requesting more financial disclosures from both, obviously, Ilhan and her hubby. It's quite the interesting details. There was an independent journalist who had, and I think it was just a civilian journalist, who had just gone to the place where the wine was being, supposedly, according to the reports, was being made. Now, the interesting angle to all of this is we have not yet seen the specific details in their wine company. But, I mean, it's like a, I think it was like a $30 million company. The last report I was looking at, Ilhan Omar is living the American dream, man. I mean, she's out here. She becomes a politician. She steals someone's white husband. She then, after, you know, divorcing her brother, allegedly her brother. No, it's her brother. And then she goes on to start a new relationship. And then she just, I don't know, she just ends up with a married man. The divorce was quite messy. The ex-wife had a lot of allegations that she outlined in court against Ilhan. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's quite interesting what's going on there. So it looks like James Comer now requesting some financial records from her hubby. We'll keep you posted on if, you know, how that develops. But obviously, that is something we're going to have our eyes on. Still a lot going on all around the country that we wanted to buckle down on, make sure we bring in straight to you guys. So I want to dive into some other topics, of course. Just so you guys also know, in the next hour, I'll be joined by Dan Lyman, the InfoWars reporter. He's got a lot of stories that he's going to break down to us. Also, there was another illegal alien who's apparently operating with a CDL license. Well, sadly, he just killed four individuals, allegedly. Dan Lyman joining the show to talk about that. But I want to talk about voter. Mel Kay also will be joining us too in the next hour. How could I forget that? I want to talk about something interesting. Bill Maher's out here now in clip six, and he's talking about apologizing to the QAnon folks. Why? Well, he thinks they got a lot right. Take a listen to clip six and what he said.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but where does QAnon go for the apology? You know, I mean, QAnon, which believed in lots of really ridiculous things like, you know, Democrats eat babies.
Yeah.
But they were kind of harping a lot on the idea that the elites are running this pedophile ring. And I mean, I made jokes about them. I also made jokes after the Epstein thing happened originally, that were on the idea of, well, you know, there, like, obviously there was some smoke there. Well, now with all that's come out in the last couple of weeks, there's a little more than smoke. It does look like anybody who was at all able to get in touch with Jeffrey Epstein, he was the man.
We're doing it.
They just, yeah. I mean, and then they all lied about it. Everybody has, and the arrogance also of thinking they could just use their real name in an email, which they did, and didn't try to, like, couch it in, you know, when I used to get pot before it was legal, it was like, I'd like two shirts, please, you know, and no seeds in the shirts this time. You know, you had to sort of codify it. No, they're just openly talking in emails about this sort of, you know, sexual perversion and that they were all doing. And lots of people who you didn't think, you know, or I never imagined were doing it. I see these names come up. So, you know, I mean, QAnon, yes, a lot of crazy there. But you know what? You weren't totally wrong about that, you know, guys.
I don't know. Is a win a win? A win's a win, I think. Obviously, Bill Maher, very opinionated. He's starting to see the light on a lot of things. A lot of things that people thought were false. Not people watching InfoWars, of course, but a lot of things that he thought were once false. He's starting to say, all right, they might have gotten it right. This is how America wakes up, and everyone's starting to catch on. Now it's time for them to catch up with the rest of us. Folks, I want to get to another interesting story. This one's quite fascinating, only given the fact that Democrats still haven't caught on. The American people, by the majority, right? It's a bipartisan thing here. When it comes to supporting voter ID, I mean, it's common sense. It's common sense. And for some reason, those Democrats don't want voter ID. Now, this is a win for Republicans if they actually decide to carry it through and actually fight on this one. But I won't hold my breath on it. But Chuck Schumer is actually refusing to pass any type of voter ID laws because, again, it's Jim Crow 2.0. Take a listen to clip 5.
So, Leader Schumer, this talk about election security has revived discussions of the SAVE Act, which you have said you oppose. Proponents of it say that it's, you know, to have ID, you have to prove U.S. citizenship to be able to vote, though some of the claims they make, to be clear, are overstated. We know there's not widespread election fraud. But polling does suggest, there's a new Pew Research poll, that 95% of Republicans, but also 71% of Democrats like this idea. So why do you not?
It's Jim Crow 2.0. And I called it Jim Crow 2.0, and the right wing went nuts all over the internet. That's because they know it's true. What they're trying to do here is the same thing that was done in the South for decades to prevent people of color from voting. For instance, if you're a woman who got married and change your last name, you won't be able to show ID and you'll be discriminated against. If you can't find a birth certificate or a proper ID, you'll be discriminated against. This is vicious and nasty. And I said to our Republican colleagues, it will not pass the Senate. You will not get a single Democratic vote in the Senate. We're not reviving Jim Crow all over the country.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of like the idea of women not voting. I kind of do. I don't know of any good that's come from it. We'll see. But obviously, Chuck Schumer is just a troll. He's just a troll. There's not a single American who could actually, with logic, argue against voter ID. It's common sense. It's common sense. Again, this is what they do. They just try to find any way to not allow voter ID because, in fact, they want the illegal aliens to be the ones voting. Good news when it comes to the fight over election integrity. Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, is really on top of that one. And I got to say, they're doing an incredible job. Her office is leading an investigation into Puerto Rico's voting machines. They're working with the FBI, part of all of this. Now, apparently, this all starts with an allegation that the Venezuelans somehow hacked or interfered in Puerto Rico's elections. But according to this report, there's no clear evidence that Venezuela was somehow involved, but it's just being looked at for now. Now, according to the report as well, this is the Daily Caller. The team seized an undisclosed number of voting machines and data copies for forensic analysts. ODNI confirmed the effort, but emphasized that it's focusing on identifying serious cybersecurity vulnerabilities and risky operational practices in Puerto Rico's election, well, electronic voting machines. So they're not specifically, this is according to Daily Caller, focus in on Venezuela and their influence. It's just the voting machines. We weren't supposed to talk about that. But here we are. A statement from Gabbard's office says that ODNI has found extremely concerning cybersecurity and operational deployment practices that pose a significant risk to U.S. elections. Well, would you look at that? I feel like we're getting a bit of a vindication tour coming soon. Yeah. People like Rudy Giuliani, maybe. Sidney Powell, maybe. There's a lot of people that do need to take a little victory lap. We hope that victory lap comes soon. People have had their entire lives destroyed. And it's worth fighting for. This is why you can't let up on these topics, folks. You can't let them corner you in with multi-billion dollar lawsuits. You have to continue to investigate. There was never a proper investigation done, and we talked about it yesterday. But it's so infuriating because they shut down any type of allegation of our voting machines being somehow manipulated. And again, we talked about it. DEF CON in Vegas. Don't believe me? Maybe you should go there. Don't bring your electronics, so they'll hack them. But these hackers, they go there, and the companies know it, and they try their very best to hack into the machines so that they can let the companies know how their machines are vulnerable. If voting machines were safe and secure, why would you need this? The companies know it. We all know it. And at some point, we've got to say, okay, enough is enough. End it. Stop using voting machines. There's no purpose for voting machines in the first place. Again, remember, they tell you, oh, it can't connect to the internet. Well, the guys at DEF CON seem to think something else is going on there. And there's been plenty of studies done that show that they do connect to the internet. Now, again, none of these companies are admitting any faults. But it's worth noting that there's ongoing investigations. And I have a thing, I have an intuition that Ms. Tulsi Gabbard's on that. And she's going to get to the bottom of it very, very soon. Folks, if you haven't done so already, head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. We're excited that this week we launched our brand new Optimal Human Hydration Packets. Now, these are incredible. This is going to get you the electrolytes that you need. It's an electrolyte drink mix. It also contains French sea salt. It's absolutely incredible. It comes in two different flavors, strawberry lemonade and lemon lime. Now, most people who do not hydrate properly, this is going to be a key one for you. This is going to give you the energy boost in the morning to help you get rid of things like brain fog, headaches, fatigue, and cramping. Most people don't realize it, but you do need electrolytes in your system. I do this every morning. I missed out today. I forgot to do it today when I was shuffling out the door, but I'm going to make sure I get this done. Probably why I've been stumbling so much, because I have not gotten my electrolytes yet for the day. But head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. Subscribe so you guys can get the incredible discount. And when you do, you're getting a better deal than you would actually get at the supermarket or any other store where you could get these electrolytes. This is top tier products that you're only going to get over thealexjonesstore.com. Pricing better than the retailer. So head on over to thealexjonesstore.com.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease, and what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy, he's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on methylene blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans. And we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP, and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule, it should have two hydrogens on it, and like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1, it's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade methylene blue, and this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning, next-level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here, look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm 8 to 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food, stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.